Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
I thank and praise God for this borewell that God has enabled us to put in this village with the prayer and support of Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Radio Ministry, and by the prayer and support of the Pastor Greg Young and the Chosen Generation Ministry, we could put the borewell in this village for the community. Before, this community was drinking dirty water, and that was really causing a lot of sickness. But now they are getting pure and fresh water, and all the community is so thankful for Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry and all the supporters. And we pray for all of you that God would bless you and God would use you so that we can put more and more borewells in a poor and a needy community, those who are really having a problem of the water. And this is this borewell we have put, and pure and fresh water is coming, and we are so thankful for all of you. Especially we thank to Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry that help us and support us to put the borewell. Thank you. God bless you.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any good products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice on where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. We've got a great program lined up for you. Dr. Alan Lindemann will be with us, bottom of hour number three. We'll be talking with him about maternal mortality and also about the pending vax mandates and the implications that's been having as it relates to pregnant women. So we'll get into that with him. Fake news and censorship coming up with MRC and newsbusters.org, top of hour number three. Top of the next hour, Melanie Collette will be with us. We'll talk about her thoughts about J6 and Lahaina and more and more revelations. And if you have not seen our interview with Scott Adam, it's probably one of the most complete interviews about the issue on Lahaina, because both of Scott's pastors and churches he was engaged with were the first ones to finally be able to reach people with aid. He talks about how the police were blocking people in. He talks about how they were told in January that they intended to make Lahaina a 15-minute city. The governor put out a notice, and Scott attended a meeting where they talked about it. And also about the fact that from April of 2020, they started getting pressure on Lahaina to sell their businesses and sell their homes. All the way up until April of 2023. And in April of 2023, suddenly all the requests for sale went silent. And literally within 24 hours of the fire, those same people swooped back in and started hounding the business people and those that had survived and telling them, well, are you ready to sell now? You tell me. We'll talk about all that coming up next hour. But joining me right now to talk about, folks, I have to tell you, evil is active and working against us on every single front. And we begin with spiritual warfare. But faith without works is dead. And faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. We have to be in the word. We have to be in prayer. And we have to be actively saying, Lord, okay, put me in, coach. Put me in. It's time to get engaged. Gentleman who has been engaged for quite some time and has been on my program regularly talking about the significance of engagement. I want to welcome to the program David Shostokas. David, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Greg. It's good to be back with you. We had a week off. Yeah. A lot has happened since I was last here with Pastor Lee. We were here, it's almost 2 weeks now. So it's been a while, and a lot has happened in the meantime.
Well, I know one of the things that was getting ready to happen when you and Reverend Lee were with us last is that you were going to have to go with him, accompany him to Georgia as he, turned himself in relative to the indictments. And then, of course, obviously, pled not guilty because he's not guilty.
There's a miracle story associated with that.
Tell us,
Greg. To recap for folks that have missed, I am representing one of the individuals indicted along with President Trump in Georgia, in the Fulton County, Georgia indictments on the RICO charges, Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organizations Act, where they're saying that there was a criminal enterprise involved in overturning the presidential election. I'd also like to make it clear that this is a local Fulton County, Georgia district attorney that seems to be claiming jurisdiction over the entire United States, because it's not just the election in Georgia that she's claiming that there's a criminal conspiracy about, but rather the election for the presidency for the entire country. With that, I do have, it's a couple weeks ago, I was on your show with Pastor Steve Lee, who is a Lutheran minister and was among those indicted along with President Trump. We were about to go to Georgia, and they had, just in recapping that situation, I saw so many times when the news people were saying, well, the attorneys for the defendants are going in to negotiate conditions of bond. There was no negotiation, Greg. There was just come in. Here are the conditions, and the standard conditions were not troublesome. You know, it's appear in court, stay out of trouble, don't break the law. But we got to the end of that, and they said, okay, the bond that's for Pastor Steve Lee is going to be $75,000. with 10% to apply. And I explained to the prosecutors that
Generation Radio, where no topic is off.
In the end, they didn't care. They essentially said, "Here's the conditions. Take them or leave them, or else we'll be looking to issue a no bond warrant." So ultimately, we took those conditions that that of course were presented to the media as negotiated and consented to conditions, but there was no negotiations. And I've talked to counsel for all the other folks. I can tell you that there was no negotiation on behalf of any of the defendants whose counsel I've spoken to, and that's most of them.
So explain that threat that they made again, David, if you would.
Yeah, they have in Georgia, there's a thing called a bond consent declaration, where there's supposedly an agreement presented to the court between the prosecutors and the defense about what the bond should be. And then they present that to the court, and they present it to the court as an agreement. Okay. And, but there was no negotiation. Because I explained to him that Pastor Lee doesn't have the money. He doesn't even own his own home, which is not unusual for a minister. Right.
Right.
That's not a strange situation. And I said, basically, if you're doing this, as best as I know, there's a fair probability that he's going to wind up going to jail. And that's because he's incapable of doing that. There was no negotiation. I just so people know this. Even though the mainstream media, when I was watching stuff on the reports, and when they're saying, the defense counsel and the prosecutors are negotiating, no negotiation. You take this, or we will issue a no bond warrant. That is, there'll be a warrant issued, and he'll be arrested, and there won't be any bond available.
And so in you're in Illinois at the time that you're having basically given this mandate that says either come up with money or go to prison until the trial, basically is what that would mean.
Basically, that was it. I was in Illinois on the phone. We have local counsel. Great. We're so blessed to have David Oles, the local counsel with us. He's a Georgia attorney that's part of our team.
Okay.
David was in the room with the prosecutors, and I was on the phone.
Okay. And Reverend Lee at that point is with you in Illinois.
He's here in Illinois. He's not part of the conversation.
Right. Understood. Okay. And so then what happened? What turned? What caused him to?
A couple of miracle things started to take place. There's a wonderful organization here in Illinois called the Illinois Family Institute, and I've done some work with them for some churches that's associated with them. And they stepped forward and started to establish a Pastor Steve Lee Legal Defense Fund. And they just started that on Monday. We negotiated on Tuesday. The deadline to surrender was on Friday. And by Thursday night, I've been told that they'd gotten about $4,000 in contributions to assist in Pastor Lee's defense. And by the way, up to now, everything has gone to expenses, not to assisting in his defense. So they started this Pastor Lee Legal Defense Fund, which, by the way, is still ongoing. It's illinoisfamily.org/contribute. There's a drop-down menu for Pastor Lee. And so please, your listeners want to help this good man, good and decent fellow that's actually an American hero. Please, illinoisfamily.org/contribute. At any rate, they started that, and by Thursday night, they'd gotten about $4,000 in contributions. I did a podcast Thursday night. We started at 9 o'clock Central Time. I was on a podcast with Silk of Diamond and Silk. And I was explaining to her what was happening, and that it looked like every probability that Pastor Lee and I were going on a plane to Georgia. The next morning, we had to be there. The plane was leaving a little bit after 5 in the morning, so we were going very, very early. And I was explaining to her that we were going in the morning, and that by every indication, come Friday afternoon, Pastor Lee was going to be sitting in the Fulton County Jail. And so Silk says, So he's not going to be in church on Sunday. I said, it doesn't look like he's going to be in church on Sunday. And she says, Pastor Lee needs to be in church on Sunday. And she personally made up the $3,500 that was necessary to bring the total up to $7,500 to bond Pastor Lee out of jail. And he had gone to sleep Thursday night thinking that he was going to jail on Friday.
Right.
Woke up on Friday morning thinking he was still going to jail because, of course, we got the details worked out with Silk by about midnight that night. I got up at 3 in the morning to get out and go get to the airport.
Right,
and,
right.
And I'm driving to the airport, and I called Pastor Lee. He was in his car, and his daughter was driving him to the airport. And I explained to him what happened, and his daughter literally screamed aloud because it was, of course, on the car speaker.
Sure.
And she literally screamed aloud when she found out her dad was not going to jail.
Praise God.
That day, thanks to the good graces of the Illinois Family Institute, the folks that chipped in 50, 25, 100 bucks to get to the 4,000, and then Silk put the $3,500 in to bring it over the top. I suggest that it felt like a miracle. I had
Bruce
Biffle, what she was telling me, and it felt like literally the hand of the Lord said, no, this man is not going to jail today.
Wow.
You know, and that's how that all went. And then we went to, then we wound up going to Georgia, and there's more after that. But I think folks, need to know that there's literally that. But in terms of that fund, you know, the round trip airfare, we only had one way tickets when we left because he thought he was going to jail, and I thought I was going to have to stick around for a few days to try and get into court.
Right.
To see if we could have a judge review this bond situation.
In hopes of getting him out, anticipating that he'd be in, and then in hopes of fighting the legal battle or the mountain, if you will, to get him released so that he didn't end up having to be there the entire time.
Yeah, which, by the way, you know, it's relatively recently that the Fulton County Jail is under investigation because of a prisoner that was literally eaten to death by bed bugs in that jail.
Oh my gosh.
There's a federal investigation ongoing in that facility, and this is a literal truth that there was a fellow that was screaming and hollering, and they didn't pay any attention to him, and they found him ultimately dead, eaten by bed bugs in that jail.
Oh.
It was truly a miracle. Although interestingly enough, Pastor Lee had given me a long list of things to try and accomplish if he was in custody, and among those was see to it that he had his Bible and certain other things to enable him. He was planning on trying to establish some Bible classes in the jail. That's the servant's heart that
sure.
he was going into this with.
Sure.
And so. It was literally a miracle that he didn't go. But at any rate, because of that, we wound up not having to stay, and so we got tickets to come home, just because, of course, you don't have the opportunity to do much shopping for airline tickets under those circumstances. Our round trip to Georgia, he and I, that one day, $1,200, you know. And this is the kind of thing we're looking at going forward. Just the expenses alone of defending this, not counting local counsel and our legal team that we're establishing to put together, it's going to be monumental. People talk about and say that President Trump may be spending $30-40 million on his legal defense in some of these situations.
Right.
And this is not an inexpensive proposition to take place, but he did. He was home that night, and per Silk's wish, he was in the pulpit on Sunday, you know, which was
praise God.
So that was fantastic. So we were so happy about that.
So you mentioned that some other things took place when you were in Georgia. How much of that can you share?
Yeah, well, we had we found out a couple of things. We found out that, of course, in the meantime. A couple of other defendants, among them Sidney Powell and Mr. Cheesebro is another lawyer, two lawyers that were indicted for giving legal advice. They demanded speedy trials, and those trials were set for October 23rd. And prosecutor, Ms. Willis, is trying to have all trials go on October 23rd. And at the same time, though, we were advised to have arrangements, and David Oles, our local counsel, is going to be at the prosecutor's office and has been told to bring a memory device capable of downloading 3 terabytes of discovery materials. If somebody has a clue on,
wow,
that's just a massive, that's tens of thousands of pages,
right,
of documents. And yet they're trying to see to it that people, other people are going to be on trial on October 23rd. And so this was among the things that we learned. We haven't even gotten this discovery yet, but we were advised that that's how much there is. And so that was among the things. I did have occasion to speak with, since then, I've had occasion to speak with any number of counsel for other folks. There are so many different kinds of pending motions. Mr. Meadows is working on having this case move from state court to federal court.
Right.
He has a special, there's a particular federal law that applies to federal officials that are charged with crimes related to the execution of the federal duties. And certainly he's part of the overt acts for Mr. Meadows include giving advice to the President of the United States when, in fact, he was Chief of Staff to the President of the United States. And so he's got a good argument to move that to federal court. If he's successful, there may be some possibility of moving all the cases to federal court, not just Mr. Meadows. There's been a mixed bag. There's not a lot of precedent on that, but there's been cases that have been removed in the federal court in a criminal situation, and companion cases to that, to the main case that's moved, have also been moved. Whether that happens here or not, I don't know, but there's a lot of things that are going on in the meantime. There's questions of venue, because Ms. Willis accuses people of actions and has indicted them for actions that they've taken that did not happen in Fulton County.
Right.
Because when you have the RICO, you've got the overarching RICO that charges all 19 individuals. And then within that case, you have individual indictments that charge other people with crimes, and many of the crimes that they are accused of within the 40 counts didn't happen in Fulton County.
Well, but there's also there's a couple of other things. I just want to get them out here and then let you talk to them. One of them is the uniqueness of this Georgia RICO law, because there's no other state, as if I remember correctly from our interviews, the prior 2 weeks, because you spoke about this individually, like we're doing right now. Then you also talked about it a little bit with Reverend Lee here as well. And I had a picture of that up just a little bit earlier of that interview, which folks can find both of those interviews, by the way, by going to our show archives at the ChosenGenerationRadio.com website. And just click on the Rumble link and you'll be able to locate those. So there's something unique about that. And then the other piece is there was news that I saw across the X platform and a couple of others, I think on Truth as well, that it seemed that there was evidence that may have been destroyed by the Georgia District Attorney relative to this case.
My understanding is that she, in fact, there is evidence, not necessarily destroyed, but evidence of that's exculpatory, that she ignored in the issuance of the indictments. And that evidence in particular relates to the what they're calling fake electors, what are really alternate electors in the event of a successful court challenge to the outcome of the election. And so she's saying that she indicted a whole group of people
right.
that signed on as electors to be electors for President Trump in the event that the then pending court case in Georgia was successful in terms of making a different determination than the Secretary of State of Georgia had previously made. And that is just the normal course of business. And there were actual transcripts taken at the time that these electors got together. And at the introduction of those electors, at the introductory part of that meeting, the discussion was that they are not presenting themselves as the duly elected electors, but rather as the alternate electors in the event of a successful challenge in court. And there's, in fact, precedent for that. It did, in fact, happen in Hawaii in 1960. They originally declared that Richard Nixon had won the state. It was continued to be challenged, and electors for John Kennedy had went and certified themselves as the Kennedy electors, and the Hawaiian courts ultimately overturned that, and then the Kennedy electors that had been put together as alternative electors, should the court case be successful, were ultimately sent to and in fact counted by Congress. And so this document, she's indicting them for allegedly illegally presenting themselves as federal officials and illegally presenting themselves as electors for President of the United States. There's documentary evidence that when they met together in December in Atlanta, that in fact they understood that they were alternates in the event of a successful court challenge. That's actually absolutely illegal activity, and yet she indicted them for that. And she had that evidence in her possession at the time she indicted them. And so I would suggest that there's some very big prosecutorial misconduct in that particular instance, but it goes beyond that, because of course all five rights of the First Amendment are implicated in the indictments. I mean, First Amendment has freedom of religion, speech, press, assembly, and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, and almost all of the 161 acts that are outlined as being in furtherance of this conspiracy to illegally overturn the election are acts that are protected under the First Amendment. And so the people that are cheering this on have no idea that they're cheering on the demise of their own civil liberties. You know, it's just it's frightening. The folks that are, and whatever you think of Mr. Trump, it doesn't. Let's talk about what you think about civil liberty in America. And but that's one of them. That's just one issue where it's quite clear that she had evidence that the folks that she indicted committed no crime.
It's really stunning what we're uncovering. I apologize, Gregory Stenstrom had sent me some documentation about this, but unfortunately it appears that the attachments have some kind of encryption on them, so I'm not able to open them, which is very strange. Okay, and now, wow.
Yeah, so that's just one thing. There is no way this matter is going to get to trial for the whole group by October 23rd. And the situation, however, for Ms. Powell and Mr. Cheesebro is that Georgia law is that if you have a trial demand running and it runs out, and their trial demand under Georgia law at the moment would run out if they don't bring them to trial before November 1st, they have to be dismissed. And actually an entry of a judgment of acquittal would enter on those cases if those two cases are not brought to trial. And I also would mention that people, the prosecutors keep talking about, you know, some sort of speedy trial and the speedy trial for the public and everything like that. I think it's important for people to know The speedy trial right belongs to each individual defendant. There is no public right to a speedy trial. Public's entitled to a public and fair trial, but they're not entitled to a speedy trial. The only party that can demand and is entitled to a speedy trial is, in fact, the defendant. And two of the 19 have demanded speedy trials. And so and the clock is ticking on those two. So you have Meadows going to federal court. You have those two doing the speedy trial thing. And then there's there's any number of pending issues regarding venue. There's several motions to what they call severance. That is defendants that are moving to have their trials separate from the others because they would be prejudiced by being part of the larger group. It's not going to happen October 23rd for the whole group. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, no, it doesn't. It certainly doesn't appear that way. I apologize. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it is. Okay. He didn't. So Gmail is doing a very strange thing of essentially blocking the documents from my view. I guess that shouldn't surprise us, right, David?
No, that shouldn't surprise us at all. You have the heavy hand of the Google folks getting involved in trying to manage your room. They're trying to protect you, Greg. Mr. Page and whoever's in charge of, I think they call it Alphabet, that owns Google or something like that. But they're just trying to protect you from having bad things happen to your computer by reading information that a friend sends you.
Yeah, that would appear to be the case. Okay, and then there's this. So that's the disclosure letter. All right. What I was going to try to bring up here and was hoping to be able to read to my audience is the information that Gregory and Leah had uncovered, which was sent to Jim Jordan's Judiciary Committee. And in the message that I had sent him, he states that the methods disclosed, documented, and entered into evidentiary base by he and Leah are the same ones that have suddenly exploded in massive reports of election fraud in Arizona, Michigan, and Georgia.
And Georgia, yes.
There's the
whole group in Michigan is a whole separate story. Because they're indicting folks for doing something that's been legal for, 223 years that I know of. It's happened probably, there's been alternate electors appointed in some state in every presidential election since 1800. The only time it never happened is when George Washington was twice elected unanimously. Since then, there's always been alternate electors, and the jurisdiction to sort out things with alternate electors has always belonged to the United States Congress. It doesn't belong to a prosecutor in Georgia or a secretary of state in Michigan or an attorney general in Michigan or elsewhere. It belongs to the United States Congress, and the United States Congress made their findings, and that's all a separate issue. But the fact is it doesn't – sorting out who's a – alternate elector, a legitimate elector, and whatever has been sent to the Congress and the archivist of the United States, that's the jurisdiction of the United States Congress. And it's always been done. It's been done, like I said, since 1800, when Jefferson and Aaron Burr had their thing that went on for 35 votes in the House of Representatives. And it took forever there.
Well, it's interesting that the current press secretary, White House press secretary, tweeted out that she thought that Donald Trump had stolen the election in 2016. I mean, she was adamant. She also stated that she believed that Brian Kemp was not the governor of Georgia, but that Stacey Abrams was in fact the governor of Georgia, and that election fraud had been committed. And she was called out on it, and she just said, "Yeah, I was waiting for you guys to say something," and then blew it off, like moved right on past it. I mean, it is
under the theories of the Fulton County District Attorney, those are criminal acts.
Well, and I'm not suggesting that they are, but what I'm saying is that if they are for one party, then why are they not for the others? Look at Inauguration Day in 2016. Look at the destruction that was done in downtown D.C. Look at how, you know, the marches. Look at what Antifa did, setting vehicles on fire.
I believe 50 or 60 members of the House of Representatives did not show up because they did not. They were protesting and saying that Mr. Trump was not president.
I remember that. Absolutely. Yep.
And that's, you know, that's their First Amendment right. You know, I mean, that's why all these things contesting elections are all First Amendment rights. And to say that they're either criminal or even to say that they're frivolous is against the First Amendment. You know, one of the counts in the indictment involves indicting a couple of lawyers for filing a lawsuit. There's one count in there that says an overt act in furtherance of this conspiracy was filing a lawsuit. That is not like the most secret conspiracy you could have. You know, you actually go to court and want to present evidence, and they're saying that's sort of an overt act in furtherance of the criminal conspiracy. And so they're just trying to tell people that when the authorities say this is the election result, sit down, shut up, and this is it. You know, and there's always questions. There's always something that people can question, and an election's not actually over until the litigation is over.
Right.
You know, it's not over on election day just because some secretary of state or clerk in some office says it is. It's over once all the litigation is complete. The challenges, voters' challenges, signatures on absentee ballots, challenges, the security procedures, all kinds of things that are necessary to determine the actual and true outcome of the election, as opposed to just sit down, this is what we said it is, sit down, shut up, or else we're going to throw you in jail. What?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, Greg. It's a very dangerous tact they've taken, and again, the people that cheer this on, I don't care whether you like Donald Trump or not, but if you like America, you want to have people able to contest an election. Sometime or other, you're going to think that you lost, and you're going to want to say this and this were wrong, and I want to go to court and challenge it. And a lot of people are not going to do that because they might go to jail for going to court. This is insane.
Well, and the targeting that's taking place, you know, again, individuals that you know stand up. I mean, you know, you're taking a huge risk in a manner of speaking by engaging yourself as the defense attorney relative to this situation, predicated on the current climate, the political climate that exists. You know, it is the right of the defendant to have defense, to be able to properly defend themselves and to be considered innocent until proven guilty. I would suggest that perhaps that whole concept is under attack. We're watching it here with the impeachment of Ken Paxton and what's taking place with regards to that. I mean, this is a political hit job that's being done by a whole bunch of rhinos here in Texas, and I'm very concerned about, you know, what happens. You know, they tried to have charges dismissed, the impeachment indictments dismissed yesterday, and in every round, you had Republicans join with Democrats to deny the defense team's motion to have these articles dismissed, which where in fact they should have been dismissed. I mean, quite frankly, they should have been dismissed. But instead, they're going to have this sham trial, and it keeps going on. And in one of the quotations I was watching with a prosecutor yesterday, he was questioning the witness on an article that had not yet been entered into evidence. And he continued. It was obvious that he was creating a pattern, because what he would do is he'd start to ask questions. And then it would be like, objection. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot to enter that in. You know, let me go ahead and get that entered into Evan. It was very sloppy. But after he did it the fourth time, you began to realize that this wasn't accidental. This was intentional. And then at one point, when there was an objection that was raised regarding executive privilege, because the guy on the stand was the guy that was supposed to be advising the attorney general on certain matters, and they were supposed to be able to have conversations, and the attorney general was supposed to rely on the fact that I can have conversations with this person that are privileged conversations. They destroyed that. And then the prosecutor's argument was, well, because Ken Paxton decided not to come back that afternoon, which I don't blame him. But anyway, they said, well, he's not even in the room, and he's not here, so he doesn't have any rights.
Wow. Yeah, there always even, I don't know what to say to that. You know, it's just so astounding. And people that sit back and cheer that on because they disagree with the politics of the individual under attack, don't understand how quickly these things can be turned upon them. You know, and essentially, yeah, we've become lawless. We've given up all the norms. People have no concept of understanding that the norms are there to protect all of us. They exist to protect everybody's rights. And so you should, in fact, participate and support the norms and understand that, you know, you can't do this. Just whatever it is that you dislike about somebody, that doesn't mean they should be locked up. You know, so I don't know. We'll see how it goes forward. Yeah. You know, you mentioned me. It's interesting that I will also say that there's two overt acts of the 161 that involve Jenna Ellis and Mayor Giuliani. And, hearings in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where they're counseling state senators and other members of the Pennsylvania legislature on their actual authority under the United States Constitution, under Article 2 of the United States Constitution, and their authority to determine what electors are sent to the Congress to be counted. And of course, they held hearings. And guess what? I testified at the hearings that are put forward is over X in favor of the conspiracy to overturn the election. And my testimony was really on my observations in Pittsburgh.
Right.
I actually saw them bring in 300,000 ballots that had been opened outside of the room where they were counted. So nobody knows what the provenance is. Nobody knows what was inside those envelopes, because those envelopes came in to the space to be counted. They came in open. And that was part and parcel of my testimony in Pennsylvania. It was more than that. But I'm reading the indictment, and I'm going, geez, I was there at these. And somehow Ms. Willis is declaring she has jurisdiction over the conduct of a hearing done by the Pennsylvania legislature. You know, the Pennsylvania senators are the ones that get to determine what happens in that hearing.
Sure.
You know, and one of the more important things about a democracy, one of the more important questions that people don't realize where we litigate and go so often, the real question is who gets to decide an issue? Like the whole overturning of Roe versus Wade. It wasn't really about abortion. It was about who gets to decide the question of abortion. Whether the Supreme Court gets to decide or whether or not the state legislatures get to decide. And historically, it was always the state legislature that gets to decide those kinds of matters. And this is another kind of issue where who gets to decide what's a legal activity within the Pennsylvania state legislature. I'd submit to you, it's the Pennsylvania state legislature, not some district attorney.
Let me create maybe a small jump here, and maybe I'm overthinking this, but there is an article in Title 18 USC Section 242 that is entitled Deprivation of Rights Under Color of Law.
Yes.
And it says, whoever under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than a year or both, and if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosive, or fire, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and if death results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, shall be fined under the title or imprisoned or any for any term of years or for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. Now, if you are threatening a no-bond bail where you are extraditing someone from one state to another, and maybe extradition is an inappropriate term, but maybe where you are kidnapping someone and moving them from one state to another under the color of law in a manner that is in direct violation of their constitutional rights, I would strongly suggest that this DA Willis needs to strongly reconsider every move she is making right now, because kidnapping has some pretty serious consequences, including life in prison or the death penalty.
There's an argument to be made that each and every one of these defendants is being deprived of civil rights under the color of law. What you talk about is the criminal sanctions for that. It's often that when it is applied, and it's applied rarely, but if it's applied, if it is applied, it's frequently applied to say police officers that overstep their bounds and arrest people for driving while black, under those kind of circumstances, if you can prove such a thing. There is a companion civil law that Section 1983 under Title 42, and Section 1983 gives the person who has been deprived of their civil rights under color of law, gives them the ability to recover damages for that. So depending on this outcome, there's a variety of potential liabilities on behalf of Ms. Willis and I would suggest her team. I would say that just because you're following orders, that's the whole Nuremberg defense. Just following orders, if you legitimately should understand that what you're doing is depriving someone of their civil rights, and I would suggest that saying it's illegal for a president to give a speech, or illegal for lawyers to give legal advice, or illegal for a pastor to knock on a door, you're willfully depriving somebody of a variety of different civil rights. And so there's some potential liabilities, but we have to get through this mess in the first place. And while you make light and say knocking on doors and giving speeches, it all sounds so silly, but the potential penalty for Pastor Lee and the other defendants 5 years in a Georgia state prison is the minimum. There's no nothing for probation. There's nothing for home confinement. There's nothing community service. 5 years up to 20, but it's a 5-year mandatory minimum. So it's a very, very serious weapon that's being waved at all these folks.
All right.
But I'm happy to say that everybody at the moment, everybody is, in fact, pled not guilty.
Right. Well, now I saw some article that said, "Oh, some are starting to turn on Trump." We don't really have time to get into all that, and I don't know what you have heard about any of that stuff. But
I have no reason to believe it's true, and I've talked to a lot of defense counsel.
Okay, but here's something that is a question, and this is one that came up yesterday with Michael Letts when we were talking about the Harrison Floyd situation and the J6 people and so on, and that is this. Who enforces the law against the lawless when the lawless are supposed to be the law? When you have a Department of Justice and an FBI, and I mean, I just read another article yesterday where the FBI went in and kicked another guy's door down, busted into his home, showed up, you know, at his house to arrest him because he went and heard President Trump's speech on January 6th. This is 2.5 years later. And they are still kicking down doors and arresting these people and carting them off in spite of all that we know. I mean, folks, look up the American, my friend David and the American Gulag Chronicles, which are letters from those imprisoned describing their conditions and their life and what's happening to them, firsthand accounts from the individuals that are being held without charges or bond, by the way, without anything, just held like prisoners. Yeah, David, I mean, that was the question that was presented, and I'm like, I mean, I don't know. You're you know, I told him that I would ask you because I don't know. What do you do when you're living in a country where the law where those who are supposed to be or entrusted with carrying out, and judges included, because we're watching this. They have to get a judge's order. They can't just go kick down a door. They have to get a judge's order,
right,
that approves them going and kicking down these people's doors.
I suggest folks go read the Declaration of Independence. There's a long train of abuses that are outlined in the Declaration of Independence, and the remedy for that is revolution, which is why they don't teach the Declaration of Independence, and so. There's a long list in there that explains when a government has failed to secure the rights of the people. And there was an outline there for to measure when the government's gone bad. And we'll see. This everybody always says that this election is the most important election in our lifetime. This truly is the most important election.
But David, I watch this stuff as you do. I'm telling you, I have to turn it on. I don't watch a bunch of everybody's commentaries because I just can't. I see things that come through on feeds that I pay attention to. And even those, I go into this intense prayer of God, you know, we need you to intervene. But that having been said, the concept, the idea of that next step, they've gone there. I mean, we have to understand they have declared. If you want to ask the people in Lahaina whether or not they think the government of Hawaii declared war on them.
I understand one of the Proud Boys was sentenced to 22 years yesterday. I also understand that he was never even in Washington for January 6th.
Well, Joseph Biggs was given 17 years.
Yeah. These are very, very strange, unusual times. And if I may make one suggestion, if somebody wants to do something at the moment, we are there and we're doing this thing. IllinoisFamily.org/contribute.
It's on the screen. As a matter of fact, Let me switch. There we go. It's right there on the screen. Reverend Steve Lee, IllinoisFamily.org/contribute and designate it to Reverend Steve Lee. That's again, IllinoisFamily.org/contribute. Designate Reverend Steve Lee to assist. You're helping to cover, like David said, it cost him $1,200 to get back and forth between Georgia and Illinois. Yeah. You know, and again, I have to say, and we'll talk about this probably a little bit more later on in the program, but you know, they're talking about mandates again, David. They're talking about mask mandates and vax mandates. And I have a friend that spoke directly with a TSA agent, and I know I was talking about this last night, and I had somebody say, well, is it just the one agent or what, you know? Well, from what I understand, this is pretty widespread and understood, but they're gearing up for instituting the mandates again. And my understanding is it's going to be way worse this time around than it was last time, if you can even imagine that.
Can't imagine it being worse. But I imagine I'll be back in court like I was for the Standing in the Word Ministries. And we got the church open in 2 weeks, and fortunately, we have to fight those battles, too. We have to fight those battles, too. But, yeah, it's a scary time. I hate to do that. I hate to say this, but yeah, the Republic actually is on the line. Everybody's civil rights is on the line. I had a talk with my granddaughter, and she was telling me how proud she was of what I was doing. And I was saying, Allison, I'm doing this for you. You know, I'm doing this for you, Allison. I've lived most of my life. I've gone beyond the 3 score and 10. So I'm doing this for her and all her her friends and my nephews and grandchildren. And so, remember, this is who you're doing it for. You're doing it for those kids, because we've had we've been blessed for most of our lives. This country has not been this, and now we have to stand up and give the country back to those that are coming after us.
And the reason that I continue to do this program. It is because we have to expose what's going on, and I want to give you hope. I don't want to leave you folks with the idea that there's no hope, because there is hope. There absolutely is hope. But as I said, when we began this segment, faith without works is dead, and God requires us to stand up and to be accountable for what we know to be the truth. And it's going to take all of us standing together. We the people have got to stand up against the tyrants and say no. And when you see your neighbor, this was the famous German, or I guess it was a German, or maybe Holland writer who wrote, when they came for the machinists, and they came for this one, and they came for that one, and then they come for me, and there's no one left. Well, don't wait. Okay, they're coming for the machinists right now. Folks, it's time to step up right now, because they're coming for the machinists. Now's the time we need to step up and say. But here, and I'll just close with this. I was reading an article this morning about the Paxton trial, and there wasn't a whole lot of people that were in the lobby. I'll tell you why people aren't showing up in the lobby, because they know they're going to be put on camera, and then they know that the left is going to dox them. They know that they're going to be physically under threat, so they have to decide, am I going to be too exposed if I show up there, or do I wait and mark my time for when I know I'm ready and I'll have the right effect? It's become that serious. That's the other problem. You put your face out there and they'll come for you. They've already proven it. David, God bless you.
Thank you.
Keep us, you know, we're going to continue to let people know what you're doing and continue to share this truth.
The best I can will try and keep everybody apprised of things that are going on. I have a little more knowledge than others. On the other hand, there's things I'm limited in talking about, too.
So right.
We'll try and strike that balance and let folks know.
Thank you,
Greg, for everything that you do. And I hope your audience gets the message. But I'm sure they do. That's why they're listening to you.
Hear, hear. All right, folks, we'll be back. Hour number two coming up. Melanie Collette joins me momentarily.